Hey, babes, and welcome back to your midweek miracle episode of Bite-Sized Blessings. Earlier this week, I went to get my hair cut, and while sitting in the chair, I started talking to my hairstylist about the episode that I was producing this week. And it was about June, my guest, and all that she's experienced, and my hairdresser. She stepped back for a second and she said quietly, "You know, I've seen people in my bedroom and in the house ever since I was a kid." And she said, "My mom has too, so it definitely runs in my family." And so we had a little conversation about it, and I thought to myself, wow, I can't believe she told me this. And it made me think, just how many people are walking around and can see spirits or experience the world in a way that most can't? I would have never known about my hairdresser's experience, except that I brought it up. And it makes me think that there are a lot more people who are sensitive in one way or another and open to a whole lot more that most of us take for granted. Which brings me to my guest this week, June Edward, who's a lifelong entrepreneur with a family history of psychic abilities. For example, her mother was a medium. And as I read more about these mediumistic qualities in people, they do tend to run in families, almost like a hereditary gift. June has a super groovy website, and there will be a link to that website in the episode show notes. And as well in this episode, we talk about her relationship mastery program that she's created. And she kind of does a deep dive into that a little bit later in the episode. Emily Dickinson said, "People need hard times and oppression to develop psychic muscles." And as you'll hear in this episode, June absolutely had her hard times and suffered great oppression, because that does seem to be kind of a theme for those who claim to be psychic. So now, without further ado, my interview with June Edward.
I put the surgery off as long as I could because I just knew I was going to die. I knew it. And even before I went in, I'm telling them, "Listen, I know I'm going to die." And they're like, "Oh, you're just afraid. You'll be fine, blah, blah, blah." So the night before the surgery, they did an MRI with a contrast dye. And I told them that I thought I was allergic to it because I'd had it once before and had an extreme reaction to it. I couldn't get off the table for hours. And they're like, "It's normal. It happens to everybody." What do I know, right? I'm 27 and I'm not the doctor. So as soon as they administered it, I immediately coded. I died. And I was just, boom, I was immediately taken to the lowest level of heaven. And I could see everything that was happening below, not just to me and my body. I could see what was happening, you know, in other areas of the hospital. And I was getting a life review, which apparently I never called it an NDE, a near-death experience. I never even heard the term for years. All I knew was I died. And scientists coined that term because they haven't been able to quantify it yet. So when they can, they'll change the term. My name is June Edward. I am a relationship expert, best-selling author, speaker, and a psychic medium.
There's so much in those titles. I just think to myself, I want to know more. And I saw you have this really fun and incredible book that I read a little bit of, and it's such easy reading and so friendly. How did you kind of get into being a relationship expert? How did that happen?
So when my abilities opened up about 11 years ago now, you know, you train like everybody else. You start out reading cards and I go into benefits. And a lot of people would come to me and want to know about relationships. So, you know, when you listen to your soul, you get in touch with your higher self. So your soul is way too big for your body. If some of it's in your body, some of it's over your body, they call an aura. And the majority of your soul is really in the lowest level of heaven, which is the fifth dimension. So when you get in touch with your soul, you're not just getting in touch with what's inside here. You're getting in touch with the majority of it that's really in the lowest level of heaven. And that has all the knowledge of all your lifetimes. And it knows your plan here and what you're supposed to be doing. So when you learn how to listen to that and make your decisions from that, it puts you on the path in life that you're supposed to be on. And, you know, you can always look behind and see the breadcrumbs and how one thing led you to the next and the next and the next. So the first thing I did was start a Facebook group for relationship advice. I started out with general advice. Nobody was interested in general advice. Changed it to relationship advice and had like 20,000 people on there in no time. So then I heard that I was supposed to be making videos about relationships. I'm like, okay. So I sat down, I wrote out everything about relationships, about, you know, blended families, marriage, divorce, retirement. I did 10 videos on different topics. And then I'm like, okay, I hired a production company. I hired professionals to do this. Then I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do with them? I don't know. Maybe I'm supposed to sell them on the Facebook group. So I put them there. Nobody was interested. Put them on my website. Nobody was interested. Fast forward a year and a half. They're like, you need to create a program. I'm like, a program. Okay. So I created the Relationship Mastery Program, which is a 7-week program. And I save relationships one person at a time because I only work with one person in the relationship. Because there's always a leader and a follower, and it only takes one person to make or break a situation. And my results are astronomical. And all these videos plugged right into my program. It was just amazing. I'm like, oh, that's why you had me do them. So when you listen to the other side and you understand, you know, they have your master plan. You don't have it. If you knew it, you wouldn't get out of bed every day. Life would be too boring. But they know, and they'll give you, you know, the little breadcrumbs to follow all the time to put you where you're supposed to be.
You know, I read a little bit, as I stated, and you talk about what it was like when you were a kid, when kind of your gifts started showing up a little bit and just the experiences that you had. And I think you've worked with the police on some of their cases. And, you know, I think some people might think, oh, my gosh, what a huge gift to be able to help people, to be there for people, to assist people in all these different ways. But I think it can also be stressful and be a bit of a burden.
That's anything in life, right? Getting out of bed in the morning sometimes can be a burden, right? I mean, I've got back issues. I'm in pain every day, but I deal with it. And it's like anything else. If this is what I'm supposed to be doing, this is the job. I love what I do. There's nothing more fulfilling than helping somebody else. And I think the majority of people will feel that way no matter what it is. To help another individual gives you such a wonderful feeling inside that you've been able to do something for someone else. I mean, this is why we're here, to help each other. So believe me, I've paid my dues. I was a serial entrepreneur. My life was so out of balance, working 80, 90 hours a week, running 5 businesses at a time. I love what I do. I can't do it enough. I really can't.
As a kid, or as these gifts started coming to you, was it a little scary or was it?
So as a child, it's frightening. And, you know, I couldn't really go to my parents. And, you know, when you tell kids in school what's going to happen, you get labeled a freak. I had all kinds of nervous habits and tics and stuttered, and I was a mess. You know, it's very frightening when you wake up in the morning and there's, you know, faces in your room, and, you know, you're seeing people that you think everybody else sees, and they don't see them, you know? It's very frightening. So, you know, I blocked it for a long time because I was afraid of it. But then you would think, I died at 27, and you would think that would have been the opening, right? But that's not the plan. You know, the plan was, I still had a lot of things to go through and a lot of things that I had to learn so that I could do this work and help the people that I do. So my abilities really opened up about 11 years ago when I started to meditate. And the first time I meditated, it was like they kicked the door into the other side and they're like, she's ready. And then I couldn't shut it off. And again, it was very frightening because, again, I'm waking up as an adult and I got 30 souls around my bed, you know, and I'm working as a medical esthetician and I know everything there is to know about everybody. And I'm like, I don't know why I know all this stuff, but I do.
Yes, it's been actually very interesting interviewing people who have been at the bedsides of people who are passing away. And they have talked about so many kind of fascinating and unbelievable things that happen. In one family, when someone's about to pass away, a black dog shows up and always sits at the end of the bed. And the woman was telling me the story about how her, you know, her father saw the black dog. Her sister, when she was dying of breast cancer, said, you know, was having conversations with the black dog. And one time, her sister's partner and she were sitting in the house and they heard the step of, they heard the clicking of dog toenails come in the
house. The black dog is usually not a good omen.
Right. Yeah. So
that black dog is coming to their family all the time and they're not feeling any negativity or fear. Then it must have been a soul, because we can reincarnate as animals as well as people, that's there specifically to help usher their family through with, you know, other people.
Yeah.
And
then other hospice workers have talked about just people having conversations with people who have passed away in the weeks before they die themselves. And it is just, it's such a fascinating phenomenon. And when I went to seminary, we read books on what it looks like to kind of minister at the bedside of people who are getting ready to pass. And they were acknowledging at that time that we literally know nothing about death and that things happen that we can't explain and we don't have the language for yet. And I thought, oh my gosh, maybe we're just not talking to the right people.
Exactly. Because they try to make it, you know, everybody's afraid of the unknown. Okay. So we are not the suit that sits here. We are the energetic soul that lives inside. And again, our soul is too big for our body. Some of it's in our body. Some of it's the aura over our body. And the rest is in the fifth dimension. So when we are leaving this body, most of the time, I mean, when I died, it was quick. And I was, you know, I could have stayed if I wanted to. I was told it was my choice. It wasn't really my time, or I could go back. It was my choice. And when I came back, I was back instantaneously. But that's not the majority of people, the people that are dying on their deathbed, and it's a little bit slower process for them. Because, you know, when in this body, you've got your brain, and your brain has a specific job. Other than being a computer and processing your information, your brain's job is to protect you. How does it do it? It does it by creating fear. So people make all their decisions based on fear. When you are in touch with your soul, you can't. And, you know, the opposite of love is not hate. It's actually fear. Okay. So, and we fear death because it's the unknown. Well, if you tapped into your soul, it wouldn't be so unknown and it wouldn't be such a scary thing. It would be something I look forward to it, to be honest with you. I know no one else around me does, but I do because it's just so amazing on the other side. And, you know, I watched my, well, before my dad died, both of my parents died a few years ago at the age of 93. They died the exact same day, the exact same age, 1 year apart. And they hadn't been together as a couple in over 50 years, but they talked to each other every day. And when my mother's soul left her body, I saw it immediately go to my dad and he thanked her, which I was blown away. Even though I know it happens and happened to me personally, I was blown away. So before my dad died, he had prostate cancer and then bladder cancer. And he was a misogynist and very not a nice person for the most part, but he played that role here for a reason, because I wouldn't be who I am if I hadn't gone through the experiences that I did. So he said to me one day, I want to talk to you about what you do. And I'm like, oh, really? You know, my mother was a medium. He told us she was crazy and kidnapped us. So I'm like, really? What do you want to know? He said, well, I wake up every morning and I see my mother standing next to the bed. And I'm like, well, it's about time. She's been standing there for about a year. Well, she's really there. How come right after I wake up, she disappears? I said, because your brain engages and you can't believe that she's really there. So your brain is blocking you being able to see her. But she's still here. She's still standing here. I guarantee you. So when my mom was passing away, she knew that I wanted to see her soul leave her body. It's interesting because we keep such a small amount of our soul in our body when we're ready to leave. It's just enough to keep it alive, literally. And she was taking a breath every 3 minutes. Can you imagine taking a breath every 3 minutes? And she did that for hours. So when I realized it was time for her to go, I just sat on the bed and I took her hand and I said, Mom, it's time. You got to go. I love you and you got to go. And as soon as I said that, I saw this mist come out the top of her head like energy. And I'm like, did I just see what I think I saw? And I'm waiting for the next breath and it never came. And then I saw her go with my dad and my sisters. And I'm like, oh my God. So I called the nurse in. I said, I think she's gone. She's like, yeah, she's gone. But yeah, it was really amazing. It was really amazing. And I've brought so many people through from the other side. And I've had people here that don't want to let their loved one go. They don't want them to die, even though they're in pain. We want you around. We don't want you to leave. I'm like, do you know what you're doing? It's like telling them you don't want them to retire at Disney World. You know, you're keeping them here and keeping them in pain. That's not right. You know, you want them to go because it's, you know, when this body wears out, you don't want to be in it anymore. You don't. You want to take care of it as much as you can while you're here because you only get one. And for this lifetime anyways.
Thank you for bringing up a little bit of a story of your parents and your childhood, because my second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household? I'm endlessly curious about this question.
So my mom being a medium, and it's funny, when my abilities opened up, I was searching for someone to help me control it because I didn't know how to turn it off. I was freaking out. And I ended up training for a year and a half at all the same places that my mom had trained 50 years prior. There were even a couple of people that were in the almost 100 that remembered her. Yeah, it was kind of wild. So searching for answers, because she had the similar abilities, but nowhere near as strong as mine. I was exposed to all kinds of religions, Protestant, Episcopalian, Baptist. I was the only non-Catholic at a Catholic school. My sister was Hindu. We had Jewish friends. I was exposed to all kinds of religions. And since I died and went to the other side, I can tell you that they are all right and they're all wrong. They all serve a purpose. There is only one when you get to the other side, and you're welcome to call it whatever you'd like. You can call it source energy, God, Buddha, Krishna, whatever you want to call it. There is only one. However, angels are real. They are a separate race. They were never human. Their entire existence is to help us. And their rule is they can only help you if you ask. So if you don't ask, they can't help you. And they speak in binary code and numbers. So in two of my books, A Night on the Other Side and All's Fair in Love and Karma, I do put in there how to listen and how to learn, how to understand how the angels are trying to speak to you and guides from the other side, because they're always trying to keep you on your path. The other side's just amazing. I mean, I used to think, you know, my first boyfriend's mother was devout Catholic, and she had, you know, the St. Mary statue in the bathtub in the front yard and the rosary hanging from the, and then the Venus. And I'm like, oh my God, what is going on here? Right. So, you know, now they're real. And, you know, I've had to work. They've given me an unbelievable experience in education from the other side. So I've worked with lots of lower vibrational entities. They're ghosts that are stuck here. And, you know, you don't change when you go to the other side. Just because you lose your body, your soul is the same as you were without the body, okay? And if you died of a drug overdose or alcoholism, a lot of them are stuck here because they're afraid if they go into the light, number one, they're going to be judged. So they don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to be judged. What's going to happen to me? Or they're afraid they've let someone down terribly, like their mother or their father. And I can't, they're there and I can't face them. And it's the same thing if I was doing a reading for someone and they wanted me to bring someone through from the other side. If they feel that they let you down, or maybe they took their own life, they're more difficult to bring through. I can still bring them through, but obviously it's a little more challenging. Or if they feel you're angry with them, nobody wants to come get yelled at, right? They didn't get closure or something. But they're the same on the other side. I mean, sometimes stuck and didn't go into the light and didn't go to heaven because, you know, maybe they don't realize that they're truly dead. I've run across a lot of children that have died because of yellow fever or, you know, something. There was one little girl, she kept looking for her mom. And at the time, back in the 1800s, she lived on a farm, which has since been sold and developed into houses. And she was going between 5 and 6 different houses. And every woman she saw, she's standing there going, "Mommy, mommy." So I called her family from the other side to bring her through into the light. But sometimes it's groups of people. You know, I've gone into situations where there's an attic full of slaves from the Underground Railroad, and they just gather there because it's a safe spot. Energy, you know, energy attracts energy. So if you've got one, you know, if you've got a haunted house, trust me, you got more than one ghost in there. They congregate. Or I've gone into basements and found them full of Irish immigrants because, you know, they came here during a difficult time. They're, again, have fear maybe of going into light if they're not sure, and they find each other. So, you know, they congregate into these crowds, believe it or not. Yeah. Whatever reason, I see energy. You know, when I was a kid, I used to literally be able to see the wind. Okay. I can still do it if I pay close attention, but I don't really focus on that anymore. I mean, it was fun for me as a kid, you know, to focus on it and see the wind. But I see energy. So, you know, I see these things all over the place. There are a lot of people that do. And just because you can't see them doesn't mean they're not there. You can't see the air that you're breathing, but clearly we're breathing air, aren't we? You can't see the microwaves cooking your food, but clearly something is happening when you put your coffee into the microwave and hit the button. So just because you can't see it does not mean it's not there. And it's very frustrating a lot of times for the souls on the other side. When you think of all the people that you've known and that love you and care about you, they're very anxious to talk to you for whatever reason. I mean, a lot of times it's stupid. We think it's stupid stuff. It's like, you want to talk to your grandmother, and I really want to talk to my grandma. Well, your grandmother wants to talk to you more, and she wants to know about her recipes, why they're not getting passed down. Things like that are very important to them, okay? Very important. And when I do a reading for someone, there's literally a crowd of probably 150, 200 people that show up hoping that they're going to get called on, okay, to be heard, or that I don't know what I'm doing and I'm just going to say, oh, whoever wants to come through, and then they just boom. No, I don't do that. But I can see them. You know, I was in the grocery store one morning, and when I'm not working, I'm not working. They can't bother me. They're not supposed to come to me type of thing, unless it's an emergency. And there was a guy at the front door, and I had to wait a second just to make sure that he wasn't a real person. Sometimes the form just so solid that it's tough to tell sometimes, but he was a spirit. And, you know, because I stopped for a second to look, he knew right off the bat I could see him. He's like, "You could see me." And I'm like, I'm trying to ignore him. And he's like, "I know you can see me." I said, "Listen, I'm not working." And he goes, "Damn it, I know you can see me." And so he picked up a bag of hot dog rolls from the display and threw it at me. He had a lot of energy, and it really only went about 3 feet, but the girl at the register saw it and she freaked out. She's like, "Did you just see that bag of hot dog rolls come off?" And wow, I'm like, "Yep." And I just kept walking.
To ask, because you brought it up, but how did you get started working with the police? And is it incredibly stressful? Is it, how do you protect yourself?
So it usually happens through the families. Usually the family will contact me. And where I came from, there was a police chief who actually, when he retired, became a psychic medium. So he was very open to it. But it's usually the family that would contact me in regards to a missing person or wanting to know who the murderer was, that type of thing. And then they would bring the information back to the police.
That just is so astonishing, because that's just so much responsibility. Thank goodness you're here in this world and you can help people.
Well,
honestly,
the thing is, and it's difficult because we all have an ego, right? And to do this work, you really can't have an ego, because I can't sit here and say to you, "Well, I can't tell you what I've got because I might be wrong." That's my ego. What are people going to think? You know, I remember when I was a platform medium where, you know, you'd be on stage and there'd be a couple hundred people in the audience. And I remember one time I was fairly new at it. And there was a guy in the front row who was a widower and he wanted to talk to his wife that passed. And I had him call her and, you know, I describe who shows up and I'm like, I'm saying to myself, oh my God, these people are going to think I'm insane. I'm like, listen, all I'm getting is what looks to me like this beautiful prom dress and it's being held out in front of me. And that's all I'm getting is prom dress. And I'm saying the audience is going to think I'm freaking nuts, right? The guy starts bawling his eyes out. He goes, yep, that's my wife. He goes, that was her favorite saying every time she left the house. I'm off like a prom dress. You don't know. You don't. It means nothing to me, but it means the world to the person that they're trying to give the message to. So this is where you really have to put your ego aside and, you know, hope that you're right. And sometimes you're I can only give what I get. It's that simple. I can only give what I get. I remember chasing a missing person guy around for probably 4 months. And I mean, another education for me, if they haven't gone into the light, I can't tell if they're actually dead unless they tell me, because their energy is the same as a living person if they haven't gone into the light, still lower vibrational. And he did not want his family to know he was dead. So he took us on a wild goose chase, going to every town and every place he ever worked at when he was alive. I mean, I was literally up there with them. Yeah, until they found the body. And then, you know, we called him and he's like, she wasn't ready. Nobody was ready. And he hadn't gone into the light. So I moved him into the light and he came back immediately. And then he just wanted his wife to know that he wished he'd married her and given her a ring because he had never done that. I didn't know. I thought they were married. I had no idea. But yeah, it's interesting. With everything that I do, I learn something. They are always teaching me. We're here to learn. We're here for our soul to progress. That's why we come here. We learn faster here than on the other side, and we learn faster still within relationship. And that's not necessarily a romantic relationship or a sexual relationship. We're in relationship with everyone. We're having a relationship here right now talking, but nothing is random. Everything happens for a reason. We pre-planned the things that happened in this life. There is no accidents here. And everything happens for a reason. And when you look at your life in 2020 vision, right, you look behind, you can see all the breadcrumbs, how they brought you to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing to bring you where you are right now. And you're always exactly where you're supposed to be. So people should never really have regrets, because you couldn't have done something differently to change an outcome. You can't. It happens the way it's supposed to for a reason. It really does. And you can't push a situation. You can't make something happen faster than it's supposed to. One of the lessons you have to learn is patience. Things happen when they're supposed to, and know that.
I am the worst with patience. I'm just going to put that out there. Everyone knows this. I call it pushing the river. I'm eternally pushing the river because I want to sculpt things in the way that I want them. I'm slowly learning.
You can't work against the river. Okay. The river is going to form its own little way, and you have to learn to work with the water, right? You have to learn how to work with the universe, because the universe flows, and you have to learn how to go with the flow. That's how it works.
Well, you know, my big question here on the podcast is, I would love to hear a story that you would like to share about something miraculous that happened in your life or magical. I'm like, she has 10,000 stories to tell.
I do.
Something, you know.
Because the universe really wants to bring you everything that you want. It really, truly does. It doesn't want you to live in lack or any of that stuff. And I remember when COVID hit. And I was driving a 2015 BMW. And I had gotten divorced and lost my business and lost everything a couple of years before that. And so I had already started the Relationship Mastery Program. And I'm like, well, you know, I'd like to upgrade my car. It's already 5 years old. And I'd like to get another one, a newer one. I love it. It's a diesel. So I stopped looking and find out that the last year that they were allowed to import them into the United States was 2018 because it's a diesel. So I'm like, I'm going to have to get a used one, I guess. So I start looking at the used ones, and they were $40,000 with 30,000 miles on them. And they were the ugliest colors, black, white, brown. So I put it up to the universe. I said, listen, I would really love to find the color that I had leased before, which was a midnight blue metallic with the saddle blue interior. And I'm only looking on the used classified things, right? Well, about 3 or 4 hours later, I got an email from a dealership in Rockland, Maryland. And it was for a brand new 2018 BMW diesel on the showroom floor with 0 miles, full warranty at the same price as the used ones with 30,000 miles. It gets better. Guess what color it is? Midnight blue metallic with the saddle brown interior. So now I submit the application for the loan and I get denied. I had to go bankrupt. I lost everything a couple of years earlier. I'm like, oh, okay. Clearly, this is supposed to be my car. There is no question. I just know it. I said, so universe, you're going to have to figure out how I'm going to pay for it because I certainly don't have the money for it. And I got denied the loan. So before that was probably a Monday or Tuesday, right? Before the end of that week, I had put enough people in my program that paid me in full that I was able to buy the car and have it delivered at the end of the week. This is what happens when you learn how to work with the universe. It's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing. It's like you can't make this stuff up. You have to do the work to get the reward. That's how the universe works. You've got to do the work. I did my work. I did my diligence. I knew it wasn't available. It was going to be a used one, what the prices were going to be. But you also have to be grateful. You know, the more grateful you are, the more they reward for you. And it also has to do with the law of attraction. So you have to raise your vibration. You can't be sitting there with a low vibrational, who am me? Who is me? Oh, no, I can't buy the car. Oh, well, that's that. No, you learn how to work with the angels. They want to help you. You learn how to get your energy so that your energy is flowing in that stream, okay, in that river. And then it's all about balancing your energy. So, you know, I've identified the 5 lessons we're here for through the mastery program. The first one is self-worth, and it's not value. That's value is what other people place on you. You are still the only one of you in this entire universe. So how special are you that the universe thought that they needed you and they put you here? And it's understanding that it is not selfish or narcissistic, as society would like you to believe, by putting yourself first. Everything comes from that. If you don't take care of yourself first, you're not going to be here to take care of anybody else. It's that simple. And no one else has the power to make you something. I can't make you happy. I can't make you love me. I can't make you do anything. That's all on you. So happiness is an inside job. Make yourself happy, and then that happiness ping-pongs off of everybody else. Then you have trust and communication. You have to trust that, first of all, there is a higher power and that there is a plan. You made the plan before you came here. You've got to trust that you knew what you were doing. Okay, so everything that's happening, it's not happening to you, it's happening for you, for your highest and best. And when you're too stubborn and you can't get out of your own way, the universe will step in to push you along in one way or another. You may not like the push at the time because it may not be what you were expecting or wanting. And you have to be able to communicate your wants and needs to the people in your life. Otherwise, they have no idea what you want. You know, osmosis doesn't really work and everybody doesn't read minds as well as I do. And then, you know, sex is just another form of communication. If you can't trust and communicate outside the bedroom, you're not going to be able to do it inside the bedroom. Then you have unconditional love. And I've got everybody arguing with me. There's no such thing as unconditional love. There's always a condition. Well, that's your human brain saying that. You don't stay in a relationship and say, oh, I've got to stay in this bad relationship because I'm supposed to love them unconditionally and play the martyr. That's not what it's about. This is where self-worth will kick back in and each lesson will reinforce the next. It's saying, listen, you know, I love you. I want the best for you. This is not working out. Clearly, we are not getting along. We are going different directions. And that's how it needs to go. And I wish you the best. Goodbye. And it's not bad mouthing them down the street once you turn your back. It's really, truly wishing the best. Okay. Always wish the best for people. Then you have money in balance. So living in this 3D world, the whole universe has to stay in balance. This is why you have good and evil. This is why you have left and right, up and down, and you know, you have joy and, you know, sadness. So money is energy. That's why it's called currency. And it's what we use to show whether or not your life is in balance. You don't walk into the grocery store and plop down $1 million to buy a bunch of bananas. It has to be an even exchange of energy. If you're working and you know, say you're working 80 hours a week because you just want to get ahead and you save all your money. Well, you're out of balance. You have no time for your family, your friends, your own hobbies. And then if you're just saving all your money instead of spending it, you don't have enough self-worth to spend the fruits of your labor on yourself. So that lesson is going to kick back in. And then you have the last lesson, which you're having trouble with, is patience. And it's knowing, again, it goes back to trust and communication, trusting that you made the plan and things will come to you at the perfect time. How ridiculous would it be if every little five-year-old girl that wants to get married and have babies, the stork starts delivering them at the front yard, right? No, it comes when it's supposed to come. You know, and if your biological clock is ticking and you're thinking, oh, I'm never going to get married, I'm never going to have kids. Well, if you haven't yet, it's because you didn't write it into your plan that way. Maybe when you're 50, you're going to marry a widower and raise his children. Who knows? If you knew the whole plan, like I said, you wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. Life would be too boring. So enjoy what comes your way and understand that it's a little bit of a roller coaster. But when you balance your energy, the highs aren't so high and the lows aren't so low, you can just enjoy the roller coaster.
When I was reading the excerpt that you sent me, and we don't have to talk about this, but you brought it up earlier in the podcast, and I just wanted to kind of understand what happened when you went to the hospital, and you were, I think you were 27 years old?
I was 27, yeah. I had injured my back when I was 22. And when I was 27, I had two children. I wanted to have a third, and they told me I had to have the surgery or they'd be picking pieces of my back out of my, you know, my back. So I put the surgery off as long as I could because I just knew I was going to die. I knew it. And even before I went in, I'm telling them, listen, I know I'm going to die. And they're like, oh, you're just afraid. You'll be fine, blah, blah, blah. So the night before the surgery, they did an MRI with a contrast dye. And I told them that I thought I was allergic to it because I'd had it once before and had an extreme reaction to it. I couldn't get off the table for hours. And they're like, it's normal. It happens to everybody. What do I know, right? I'm 27 and I'm not the doctor. So as soon as they administered it, I immediately coded. I died. And I was just, boom, I was immediately taken to the lowest level of heaven. And I could see everything that was happening below, not just to me and my body. I could see what was happening, you know, in other areas of the hospital. And I was getting a life review, which apparently I never called it an NDE, a near-death experience. I never even heard the term for years. All I knew was I died. And scientists coined that term because they haven't been able to quantify it yet. So when they can, they'll change the term. But less than 10% apparently of people that have an NDE actually get a life review. And it's like sitting in the front row of an IMAX theater. And the only thing they're showing me were the wonderful times I had in my life. And I had a very difficult life up to that point, to be honest with you. But they were showing me the people that actually had shown me some type of love or caring and the happy moments in my life, all of those things. And that's when they told me, you know, it wasn't really my time. It was basically an out that I had written into my life plan. I could have taken it if I wanted to. I could stay if I wanted to, or I could come back. It was my choice. And then when I remembered my two children, and I knew that one of my biggest reasons for coming here was for them, because they bring me so much joy. And I know I was here to help and navigate them. As soon as I made that decision, I was back in my body immediately.
Well, that's terrifying. I can't stand the medical profession not listening to patients.
But it happens. I mean, it's pre-planned. I knew for 5 years I was going to die if I went in for that. I knew it. Your soul knows. It's always giving you a heads up. And it wasn't terrifying. I mean, I have to go in for more surgeries. I'm not terrified. I trust. I know. I mean, I do my due diligence to make sure that I've chosen the most competent physician to be able to do the job. But quite honestly, it's going to really go the way it's supposed to go, for the most part. It really, truly is. And it wasn't terrifying in any way. It was absolutely amazing on the other side. You know, I used to say that the two things you take with you were knowledge and love, but I've now changed that because I've brought so many people through from the other side that are still angry, sad. You take all your feelings with you. You take your knowledge and you access the knowledge of all your lifetimes once you get there, but you take all of your feelings with you when you get there.
I was just thinking about, I don't know, kind of your powers being a little bit like a superpower. And I think you've done such a gorgeous.
That's my joke. My superpower is I talk to dead people.
It's so very interesting what people consider to be psychic or mediumistic abilities, but I found an article on Oprah.com that is titled, 4 Signs You Might Be Psychic. Now, I do feel that almost all of us can listen to our gut, and we have this inborn instinct that we use to navigate the world. But here are some other signs that might encourage you to understand that you might have a different way of seeing the world. Number one is 2 glasses of wine makes you more insightful. And it kind of suggests the idea that having a little bit of alcohol relaxes you and can maybe help you to understand that there are different solutions to issues that you're having in your life. Maybe it helps you find out other solutions for other people, for friends who are having problems. So that's number one. Number two, it says your new friend looks blue or red. And this kind of is the suggestion that psychics perceive people differently. So when they meet them, maybe they sense them in another way. And it says this is often because psychics experience synesthesia, a condition in which senses are swapped. So maybe you meet someone and you think, gosh, they remind me of a daffodil, or wow, that person, they're kind of like this brown color. That might be a sign that you're psychic. And then, of course, I've already talked about number 3, your gut has saved your life. And that's basically using your gut and your intuition to making decisions in the world. And then number 4, which seems to happen to me, your dreams seep into your waking life in surprising ways. Have you ever had a dream that later came true, or a dream that helped you solve a problem? Well, then you might be psychic. Or perhaps it runs in your family and you already know all this. But I do think it's worth it considering that there are probably lots of people out there experiencing the world in magical and miraculous ways. I need to thank my guest, June Edward, for telling her story this week. And I'm going to provide a link to her website in the episode show notes. Also, make sure not to miss in the episode show notes this week a special little link to something that I consider beautiful. I've decided to foster beauty in however many ways that I can. I'd like to thank all of you for listening and ask that if you would consider leaving a rating or writing a little review. And remember, please do share the podcast with friends. I'd just love it if more people were listening and understanding that there's so much beauty in this life. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like June. Be unstoppable. With everything that she faced and everything that she engaged with, everything that she had to work through, she went ahead and she just did it. So whatever problems you're facing in your life, whatever challenges are coming up, be like June and be unstoppable and understand
that it's up to you to change your own world.